Welcome to the Grappling Grappling Rewind Podcast.
Welcome to this week on the Grappling Rewind Podcast. This week's show, we're going to recap Who's Number One, that is headlined by Gary Tonna versus Dante Leon. We're going to preview Fight to Win 149, which actually we don't have any names announced for yet, but it's scheduled for next week. And we're going to preview the Third Coast Grappling Kumite 5. We have a fire bracket for that. As always in the show, I'm your host, Mange, my co-host,
Emil.
Sorry, the dog is literally sitting right under my legs because there's thunder and he's freaking out. And he's where my chair needs to be. So
he likes to freak out.
Sorry about that.
Especially anytime I entered the house.
Yeah, dude, he loves you. So this is about a little bit of news. Verdum is going to fight Buchecha in a jiu-jitsu match.
Hell yeah, dude.
So I'm literally a couple days after Buchecha announces he's going to MMA, he's like, but first, I'm going to fight Verdum.
I like this in part because like Verdum's submissions are fucking nasty. I mean, like he can pull out submissions against people that I didn't even like. Obviously, the Fedor.
I was like, if you don't mention Fedor right now, I'd be disappointed.
Yeah,
he triangled Fedor, and everyone was like, "Oh shit,
oh shit!" And he just armbarred the fuck out of Gustafsson. Like,
yeah, like
yeah,
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, no, he's
and then his armbar almost against Vinny at ADCC. Go back and watch the Stuart Cooper film on that one.
Subbed fucking Kane, like Velasquez.
Guillotine,
yeah.
And he smiled because he knew it was in like a second before everyone else did.
Yeah,
that was a great. That yeah, Verdum's a G. I love Verdum for various reasons. I'm honestly excited for this matchup. I think it's happening on BJJ. What was the promotion? New promotion that we have not seen run events before. It's like a gambling one, I think. I cannot find it in my notes. I'm super embarrassed about that, but it should be exciting. I like watching both these guys work. It'll probably be Buchecha's. Here it is. BJJ bet. So I assume it's going to be a gambling thing. It's going to be on pay-per-view on September 6th. So it's kind of coming up soon here.
Sweet.
In other news, Gordon Ryan and Craig Jones got COVID and got pulled from Who's Number One. That happened, I think, was it the morning of or the night of?
I think it was the night before.
No, because we previewed them on the show. So that would have been, we wouldn't have found out until after the show was recorded on Monday.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, so it would have been like Tuesday morning, I think.
Wait, why would it have been Tuesday? Wasn't Who's Number One on Friday?
Last week. We previewed them on the show.
Right.
And then from the time of the last recording
right.
to this recording, they got COVID and pulled off of the Who's Number One card.
Right. And I'm pretty sure that was like on Wednesday or Thursday.
Was it that late in the week?
I remember it being like pretty fucking late.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, so that's a thing. Coronavirus is still definitely around, but as a result, we got some cool replacements for Who's Number One.
We did, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, thankfully, we still had the main event, but then, you know, we got to see an awesome rematch between Hulk and Cyborg, which,
do you have any other news, by the way?
There's something on my mind.
There was something else, but in all honesty, I kind of want to get to the recap here.
Well, I just real quick, like, it's fucking hilarious that we have a major match now where it's the like names of the competitors are Hulk and Cyborg. Like, we know who those people
that's
are,
really
but like,
funny. I just realized
if I was about to talk to this to someone who didn't know shit about jiu-jitsu, like, that would sound really fucking weird.
That would sound ridiculous. Oh, Hulk fight Cyborg. Okay, and we're like, yeah, of course, like, yeah, Hulk and Cyborg. Like, that's an amazing match. It's a rematch. You're like, okay, comic book nerd.
Yeah, exactly.
Roberto Cyborg Abreu and Lucas the Hulk Barbosa.
Yeah.
If you don't know.
Which I was looking forward to this too. Like, when they announced that,
I
was like,
the first match.
I'm not even fucking mad. Like, I just fucking love this.
So props to the guys on Who's Number One and Seth and his team. Like, they kind of salvaged. Again, you lost your main event and your co-main event. You lost two of the biggest guys in the professional scene, Gordon and Craig, got pulled off the event. Like, those are two of the biggest dudes on any card, and they still punched up with this card. Gary, Dante, Roberto, Hulk, Wagner.
Yep.
Like, it was a good-ass card.
Wagner was fucking great.
Dude, Wagner looked really big, by the way.
Well, they talked about that.
Okay.
And they said that, you know, he is...
So let's move in. The recap,
I think it's worth talking about news, because, like, they're talking about, you know, he was talking about, like, being comfortable heavier and, you know, starting to look at going against people in 88 kilograms. So, you know, now you're talking about, like, Mateus Diniz.
Wagner's getting a little older, and, like, again, I think this is the biggest I can remember seeing Wagner.
Yeah.
Like, he visibly looked like, he didn't look heavy. Sorry, I'm trying to think of the right word to use here. No,
he looked like he bulked up.
He looked thick.
Yeah. Yeah,
like you saw it in like his chest and his like in like his rib cage area,
and he still moved like, you know, like we know Wagner to move. So
that was kind of a cool move. And again, super. I think he took that matchup on like 3 days' notice. Something what they said.
So I would love to see him match up against, you know, some of those bigger guys in the 88 kilograms.
Again, I love to see Wagner, dude. Wagner has a special place in my heart because he's Rachel's favorite grappler. Like, of all the people that
he's probably like Grappling Rewind's favorite.
Dude, like, there as was a whole. Month, when we first started the show, there was like a month or 2 month period. I think it was probably 2+ months.
It was more than one
where
month for sure.
We either previewed a Wagner match or recapped a Wagner match on every single show. Like, yeah. He was on every single show, and he was on the main card, main event of like every single show. So he's got a really special place in my heart because he was Mr. Competition at the beginning of the Grappling Rewind.
Yeah. I mean, we still see him a ton. We cover him probably still some of the most out of any grappler that I can think of, like, you know, I agree. Except maybe more recently Roberto Jimenez has been on fucking everything.
I think recently, but like, yeah, let's not like quarantine coronavirus doesn't count because the world's all weird.
Yep.
And yeah, Roberto's out of Texas, and so it's like it's easier for him to make the trip.
Yep.
So let's move into the recap. Where do you want to start with this one?
Let's start at the top, man.
Gary Tonin defeating Dante Leon via decision. This was everything I hoped it was going
to
be.
Yeah, exactly. It was, and to be fair, I picked Dante in this one. I was amazed. I think it was a great match on both ends. It was a close match, but what Gary did specifically, strategically, I think that won him the match was incredible. Which was,
I'm super curious what your strategic thing is going to be here. So I think I'll have a different one.
So they, you know, we knew that Gary is a high volume submission volume like grappler. Like, that's one of the reasons why he's so entertaining. He's extremely skilled. He can throw submissions from just about anywhere, really dangerous, and he throws them a lot, which is great for the fight to win rule set. Dante Leon is similar, and I contrasted them a little bit last week by saying I think Dante's a little bit more direct.
In the commentator, I think Hal picked it up. But like, Dante's pathway to victory in this matchup is most likely RNZ from the back.
Yep.
Like,
yeah.
That is most likely. And he almost got there at one point.
So that's the thing. What impressed me about Gary's strategy here and what he was able to do was he very clearly had drilled nullifying certain attacks. And
well, they talked about this too on commentary.
Continue. The Gary's amazing switches out of like front headlocks or guillotines was nuts. I mean, the moment Dante started cinching up for a front headlock or guillotine, which Dante is insanely dangerous with.
We saw him tap Zaki Behens at Fight to Win and like, a minute and a half or something? Like one of the first real exchanges in that match, he locks up a guillotine, like, he's probably not going to finish. And then he finishes Zaki.
So Gary just, it's like his wrestling erupted. Like, his wrestling's always been good, but this was extremely explosive, like just hurling.
What I thought was really funny in this match was at certain points, Dante would grab a single leg, and Gary would do something that I thought was very funny. He would actively, like, not really look to defend the single leg. He would kind of hop with it and then wait for Dante to start sort of like getting in and taking him down to roll for a leg or like go. It was really well that
was a clear bait. Like,
yeah, it was, but it was, so you don't see guys very often bait the single leg for their own entry and do it so blatantly.
The Danaher guys do. Gordon also does this, where they and the commentary where they saw Gordon or Gary like hanging his leg out for Dante to scoop up, and you could see him start to hop up. I think he was trying to basically leap into a saddle.
That's what I picked up too. Dante did a good job kind of like making, he would kind of pull him down so that Gary wasn't able to slide up and into it. It was a good job from Dante.
So good nullification on Dante's part. But you know, Gary did a better job at nullifying the pathways to submissions on Dante's part.
Yeah.
Whereas Gary was able to still get to positions where he could put up submission attempts. He got to the legs a couple of times. There was one where even in the post-fight interview, Dante said he had a good bite on a straight ankle lock. He didn't say which of the leg lock attempts it was, but having watched the match, there was a straight ankle lock attempt where I was like, okay, that looks uncomfortable. You know, that looks like Dante is going to have to address
defend it and address it.
So I think that definitely is what swayed the decision towards Gary. I thought it was pretty close.
It was the volume. It was the entries and the volume that he put up versus Dante, I think, is what gets the win. Dante had one really good kind of back take, sort of got to the side, but Gary just consistently started putting up.
There was no point. I can't think of a point where I could point to Dante having gotten to a submission attempt that we could score using the fight to win criteria.
Yeah, I mean, the one where he kind of gets sideways on the back and Gary kind of floats him
He has a short choke. Actually, he talked about that too. But like, yeah, if it moves that quickly, then, you know.
Right. And I thought Tonin had more offense overall. Again,
yep,
a super close decision. I wouldn't have been really upset with either one. I thought Gary took it.
I thought Gary took it too.
Just based on the criteria.
And I do think, you know, this is absolutely a match I would watch again. You know, like,
yeah,
it was awesome.
I did think it was really interesting they talked about the difference between this match and their first match.
Right, yeah. Like,
how Gary in the first match hadn't really studied Dante, didn't know a whole lot about Dante, and it was pretty evident that he had studied him more going into this match. He'd actually, like, done the work and looked at who he was going to face, because you saw him come with a different game plan than ADCC.
Yep, yeah.
So, again, I love watching when guys meet at tournaments versus when they rematch in, like, a super fight, because you see the game plan develop. And you
particularly from Danaher's squad. Like, those guys study so much tape. So, yeah, it was... It's a great match.
Worth your time. Go back and watch it. It's a super interesting match. I think Gary Tonin, maybe aside from Wagner, is probably one of the most frustrating dudes to fight, because he'll just fight you wherever. Like, he'll just let you start to get in on something and just, like, counter it and counter it.
I mean,
like,
Wagner has even talked about how annoying Gary is, like, specifically.
Specifically how annoying he is to fight.
And yeah.
But I love watching Tonin for that reason, because you watch it like, man, that would be super frustrating to deal with this, because he's like, you do the right things and doesn't matter.
You get a body lock from the back and he fucking funk rolls out of that, it, you know, like
he just jumped. Like, Dante at one point is about to lift and slam him, and Gary, like, in the air, kind of half reverses it and lands, gets to a whizzer, and it was just like, yo, any other grappler, Leon puts him down on his head and takes the back, mm-hmm. and Gary just, like, is squirrely and stops the position. It was just, there was all of these little pieces where, like, Dante's doing the right thing, and Gary Tonin's just like, I'm gonna make this not work right.
Yep.
So, it's super great to watch, and I bet it was super frustrating for Dante, but...
He was pretty... I love Dante,
not
like...
frustrating, yeah, but,
he was chill in the post-fight interview, and, like... You know, was fair and, you know, gave props to Gary. I hope we get to see him again in the future, because I love them both for similar reasons.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I don't have a ton more else. It was a great match. I enjoyed the shit out of it. Both these guys can contend with the top in the world. I think I want to see the JT match now.
Versus Gary?
Yeah.
So here's a funny thing, and, you know, maybe it's just because I'm a Dante stan, but, like, I feel like Dante... matches up better with JT.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Than Gary does. Yes. But I also picked Dante here. So,
well, I think stylistically, though, like, Gary is gonna give JT opportunities to do JT stuff and, like, control and stop and pressure and do.
I mean, that's the JT's pressure.
But that's what I mean. And Dante, bananas. I think, will come in with a very, very, like, not stick to the game plan game, but with a, I'm going to do this, he's going to engage the wrestling. Like, I think the wrestling, that the way that Dante and JT's wrestling matches up more in Dante's favor. I think the funk style and kind of, like, just the way that Gary wrestles, I'm trying to put, like,
well, here's the thing is, I, you know, Gary's amazing at disrupting pressure.
Yes.
But... you know, JT, I see JT being able to push his pressure more and dictate the pace of the match more. And I feel like Dante
can... Have both these guys fought JT? I think Gary has. I don't think we've seen Dante versus JT. We don't see JT a ton.
I can't remember.
I mean, both these guys are in the top five in the rankings. I think either one of them getting the JT match is very warranted. And... is amazing for the division.
I mean, hopefully JT, you know, I would love to see JT step out.
He's been on Fight to Win before, so it would not surprise me to see him. And they kind of pushed and hinted at, like, hey, JT, take a Who's Number One matchup, yep, fight one of these guys.
Yeah. They're obviously.
But I appreciate that. I mean, because it's a matchup that I want to see, and it's a matchup that makes sense, and a matchup that makes sense in the division and per the rankings. Like, it's a really good matchup. I'm happy that they're pushing a really good matchup like that. So, that was the main event. On to the co-main event. What do you want to do next?
I think co-main's perfect.
Co-main event.
Cyborg versus Hulk.
Cyborg Abreu versus Lucas the Hulk Barbosa.
Cyborg takes it with a decision.
With a guillotine attempt. Those two guillotine attempts that he had, I think, were the biggest
hands down
submission offense in the match, and they both looked tight, and Hulk did a great job of just going dropping and spinning
out. He had to alligator roll. Like, you could tell, it's kind of similar to the Gary thing, where, like, the moment he felt, or actually not even the moment, I think Gary was a lot faster at reacting.
But bigger guys, too.
Yeah, like Hulk, he felt like he was in serious danger.
We just saw Cyborg's guillotine versus Felipe Andrew at Third Coast. Yeah. Like, we know how dangerous and how tight, and he finishes with that, like, he can finish you from the standing position.
So he, that's the sequence where he does, where Cyborg hits one of the guillotine attempts is so amazing because Hulk shoots a single, and what was weird is that Hulk shot a single on the back leg, which was unusual to me.
We see guys do that not infrequently in jiu-jitsu. It's a thing you don't see a ton in wrestling, and I'm speaking out of my ass here. I want to make it known. You're taught to kind of shoot towards the front leg, but a lot of times guys will still shoot in jiu-jitsu for the back leg because you can get it a lot of time.
Yeah, so Hulk is able to get there, and like, I don't know if shooting for the back leg is what causes him to be vulnerable to this, but Cyborg drops the nastiest counter arm drag ever, and like, suddenly Hulk goes from getting a bite on a single leg to having Cyborg like on his back while he's turtling again, and Cyborg grabs the front headlock, starts doing the guillotine, and starts doing the same nasty guillotine that we saw him do a few weeks ago.
Felipe Andrew. Yeah, in the finals.
Where he kind of starts floating and matching the levels to finish the choke. And so there's a moment where Cyborg is on one knee doing that kind of like partial standing guillotine, and Hulk's head is in that nasty guillotine position where like it's just starting to fold.
You're looking at your own chest.
Yes, exactly. And that's when Hulk just does the most batshit insane, like, legs everything completely off the ground alligator roll. And he's able to roll out.
That's how you got to get out of it. Like, there isn't a nice way in your neck to do that, to get out of a deep guillotine like that.
Yeah.
And again, as a guillotine player, like, the guys that are super successful in getting out of like tight guillotines like that are not the guys that fight the hand, pull down. They're the guys who just like make you eat all of their weight on your hands, and basically you have to control them. And it's so hard to control someone that's similar to your size with just your hands, and especially in the configuration that Cyborg has his hands, it's almost impossible to lift like 200 pounds just on your forearms and in your hands there, because someone basically, they drop their weight into the neck and you're stuck trying to lift them back up, and they can just make enough space to get out. And that's what Hulk does. He loops the arm around, and it was a really great defense, but it was dope to watch.
It was dope to watch because like the sequence doesn't end there, because like after the alligator roll, Hulk comes up and almost gets to the back of Cyborg for like a standing body lock, and Cyborg loops the leg to prevent the back being taken, and after a little while Hulk is able to turn that into a crucifix, but you know, Cyborg's just too wily. Cyborg pops out of the crucifix and then turns it into another guillotine.
This is why I don't pick against Cyborg anymore.
Exactly. No,
like, it's shit like this. It's like oh, and then he turned into another guillotine.
Yeah,
like,
There's one
guillotine here that I really liked. Is Cyborg goes for a front headlock, and then he reaches with the same side arm on the close posted side leg of Hulk and turns it into I just slammed on the mic there. He turns it into a takedown.
Yep.
And I thought it was a really nice, we see it from Cyborg. We see it actually really, really frequently at the heavier divisions from the front headlock, as guys will push forward and reach and just turn the corner on that front side leg. It's a technique we see a lot. It's a technique that I think works really, really well, especially from like the current kind of meta in Nogi and the snapdown. You see it occasionally from the collar, but just a really cool technique and one of the kind of bigger positional changes of the match.
Yeah. And so a little after halfway through the match, Hulk starts to look exhausted.
So I picked on that too. What I thought it was is I thought it had to do probably with his like big flight from Brazil for Rio de Stars to Texas. Like that's a pretty major set of travel to do in a week. Go fight in Brazil, go back, fight in America. And
man,
within
we saw him tired as well in their Kasai matchup.
But that was also at the end of a tournament too. And Hulk put a lot of energy into those early matches.
I've never seen Hulk get tired before. Like the big matches that I see Hulk in, I just don't remember him looking exhausted to the point where like his arms are sagging and he's not. It's equivalent would be like when fighters don't have their guard up, but like in this case, his arms were really low and not in a good position to, you know, stuff a takedown, and Cyborg looks totally fresh, and you know,
dude,
towards the end
go.
he hits a blast double, you know, while
that is an underrated tool that I forgot Cyborg had, is that just I call it the fuck you blast double, just the head in the chest blast double.
Yeah,
we see that almost every time Cyborg fights. He will like if he is willing to stand with the guy, we will see him implement that.
Yeah.
And it's just a tool that he is very, very quick for the division.
Yeah.
And it's
he's quick, and I mean, he's tenacious, you know, which is what you need.
He just drives
that.
And drives. Yeah. So, yeah. I don't have a ton more in the match. It was great. Cyborg gets a decision. It was a lot of fun. It was a rematch that I, again, there are two rematches right here that I was very happy to see.
Yep.
I will be happy to watch these guys.
It's chaos.
Thanks,
in the
dog.
Apartment.
Dude, it wind's blowing, hurricanes coming. We'll talk about that at the outro section of the show. It was a really good match. We're in the next match.
Yeah, let's do it.
Wagner Hoxha defeating Rolando Jr. via split decision. Super close decision here. And Wagner stepping up on 3 days' notice to face Rolando. He was much bigger in this match.
Yeah, he was. Basically Wagner actually shoots
for
his own.
We talked about that on air, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah,
new section. I don't know if we talked about it before the show.
Yeah. Wagner looking thicker. Wagner shoots at one point, and Ronaldo like hits a awesome guillotine, and it jumps, you know, into the guard to get the finish. And it was, you know, that I think was off the bat set the tone for the match. And I was like, all right, is, you know, at this point, Wagner's behind and needs to start generating. And for a while, I thought, you know, Ronaldo was going to...
For a while, I thought that was what was going to decide the match.
Yeah, me too.
Because for his big stretch of the match, I mean, this was, and kind of more recently, what a Wagner-Hoxha match looks like. A lot of heavy collar ties, a lot of, like, kind of clubbing collar ties, pushing at the hands, pushing, like, it is an attritive battle on the feet with Wagner. That seems to be what he is looking to have. And with that one kind of positional offense that Ronaldo put up,
I was kind of thinking, if
the rest of the match sort of plays out like this, I'm going to have to lean Ronaldo. I think Wagner...
But then Wagner turned it up. Like, and, you know, dude, Wagner started setting up a calf slicer at one point, has an awesome straight ankle where, like, you know, he has all the positioning he needs except his feet are dancing around because Ronaldo's doing a great job at, like, unsettling them and preventing Wagner from getting the leverage that he needs to kind of hip backwards and really, like, put pressure into the ankle.
Ronaldo's also doing a really good job. We could be talking about the same ankle lock attempt, but he's doing a really good job of actually pushing his foot almost to make it, like, towards the Estima grip. Wagner still had it low.
Wagner ends on an Estima lock.
Okay, you're talking about a different ankle lock.
Yeah. This was a regular straight ankle. I mean, right. And then, towards the end, Wagner sets up a nasty-looking Estima lock, has the extension on the leg, which, you know, I'm beginning to realize is really important.
Yeah. Ronaldo. Ronaldo does a really good job here. He starts kicking that inside of Wagner's leg and thigh, because I think he's the taller guy here with the legs, at least, and so he has a lot of leverage to push his legs there and get away, and eventually ends up, I think, with like 10 seconds left, something like that, or less than that.
Yeah.
Basically kicking Wagner's hands off and like disincentivizing it, and Wagner comes up. But I think both those ankle locks, like,
yeah, I think
looked
those
pretty good. They didn't look like guys throwing up ankle locks for points.
Right.
They looked,
looked like
I'm happy to
Ronaldo
beat you with this.
Ronaldo was like, oh, I got to address this. You know, like he was doing all the right defenses. Yeah, yeah.
The correct defenses to get out of, like, an ankle lock that's real.
Right, exactly. As opposed to, like, you know, you can tell when a leg lock is like, maybe that's not such a big deal, when, like, the person has time to, like, stop and then throw a leg lock attack of their own.
Do they choose to counter, or do they not choose to counter? That's right. The more I see high-level guys leg lock, the more I see in, like, more even matchups, if it's legit, you'll see a guy defend it. If it's maybe, you'll see a guy go for a counter of his own, or, like, and yep. You kind of see the meta here. So it was very evident that Rolando was like, nope.
Yep. That's all I got for that match. Yeah,
it was
great.
A lot of it was on the feet. Yep. There was a couple exchanges here and there. It was a very, very close decision. I thought it was on the Flow Grappling broadcast, they had a voting system. They have on the live broadcast, they have, before the match goes, they have like a vote, and the people watching the stream can like vote on who they think is going to win. They also have a live chat now. So like during the event, you can like, I mean, guys do talk shit.
That's on
the
event.
I mean, I didn't really do that, but I got in there occasionally and would talk a little bit, because it was like, it's like a live chat. And I was like, this is kind of cool.
That's awesome.
I'm not sure how long Flow will keep that, or if they're going to implement more of that, but the voting and the live chat are like cool new things on Flow that, as long as they manage them right, I think could be really, really cool and potentially get like a larger community into like live viewing of these things. Because grappling, for the most part, especially now, but like even before, a lot of times is a pretty, like, you don't really get big groups together for most events. You kind of watch it by yourself, versus like a UFC, you'll go out to the bar and watch with people. But there's only a couple grappling events we ever usually will get together for. So if they sort of cultivate that environment, I think it's really cool. And this was the match that I noticed it in.
Yep.
Next match?
Yeah, let's do it. Elizabeth Clay defeats Maggie Grindati via Gogo Plata. What?
We know she's got a good Gogo Plata, but dude, Grindati's really good. And so it was crazy to see Elizabeth, who's still technically a brown belt. The beginning of the match started off slow. Elizabeth, as
all seated guard,
always pulls, and Grindati's kind of like double legs on the butterfly, like working a pass, pushing. I was like, man, is this gonna be the whole match? And then Clay goes into the full guard, and then Grindati like pushes right into it to put a lot of pressure on the neck to try to do like a stack crush pass. And Elizabeth, really flexible, starts to set up a Oma Plata.
I mean, it's a rubber guard, but rubber guard. And then, you know, but the entire time the commentary is talking about how good her Gogo Platas are, and then, you know, she goes from rubber guard, she loops the foot underneath and just starts pulling down on Maggie's head, and that was it. You know, like, it was...
I was looking at it like, nah, it's not
Maggie. Maggie tried to slam out of it.
Yeah, which you should definitely do, because I've seen people on Fight to Win slam out of Gogo Platas more so than I see them finish. Like, usually people get to Gogo Plata, somebody slams out of it, the person putting on the Gogo Plata goes, no, it's very rare you see him, because the slam is a really good, like, counter to a Gogo Plata.
Yeah.
But credit to Clay. She holds on to it, holds through it, and gets the sub.
Yeah.
Dude, on the main card in a black belt level, a black belt match.
Yep.
Crazy. I think, so, Clay's in a really interesting spot now, because she's beaten most of the women by submission at over 60 kilograms.
Yeah.
So I would assume that she is the front runner for the trial spot. I think, I could be wrong, I thought she won the trials... might have been seven. I think she's a trials winner. I know she's a trials medalist. I think a trials medalist in 2019. She might have lost to Riesling, but I don't remember. But I know we've seen her on trials before. Trials happened on the West Coast again in a year or so for women's trials. I want to see her fight Gabby.
No, the trials are less than a year.
For West Coast trials, not the East Coast trials.
They're less than a year.
Are we that close?
Yeah, dude.
Oh, shit, 2021.
It's August.
We're a year till ADCC.
Yeah, like...
Oh, my God. Dude, yeah. Time's been...
It's 13 months. 13 months.
Till ADCC. Jesus, dude, this creeps up on me fast.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying.
We got to get a vaccine.
Trials are going to be in, like, 6 to 7 months, dude.
So, and if we see her more super fights, I want to see her fight Gabby. Because, you know, Gabby fights in Fight to Win. And I think that's... like the last, her Porferia. Those are the two big dogs at above 60 kilograms.
Oh,
right?
Well, no, I was just thinking about like how are trials gonna happen?
Emil, shh, quiet. We'll talk about it later.
No, dude,
we'll talk about it later, Emil. Not we'll cross that bridge when it comes trials time. Even though every other event is postponing and canceling their event, like we'll cross that bridge later, Emil. I want to see your fight.
I do too. Yeah, it was impressive.
At this point, I mean, the last like 4 months, Clay has defeated most of the big women at over 60, and so she's in a really kind of strange spot where you got Gabby and you got Porfirio, and that's it.
Yep. Yeah, that was it. It's a pretty quick submission. So, next up we have Edwin Junior Cassio defeating Gabe Tuttle via decision.
Gabe Tuttle's the guy that fought Kyle O'Tara a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And dude, Junie looks fucking
it was beast,
good.
Dude.
His passing is good. His tech-ups are good.
What I loved about his passing was like he Junie started doing like the dance passing, you know, where you're just stepping through the person's guard, but then he combos it into a knee cut like pass and passes. It's just a beautiful combination of both like dexterity and pressure. Mm-hmm. You know, usually people try to go one or the other.
Yeah, they kind of pick a style, but to go like, between the two styles, yep. you do see it, but to see it in Nogi like this is like when it's someone really does effortlessly dance past a guard,
yeah,
it looks really, it really cool. It's really impressive to watch, especially like in a black belt main card match.
Yep. So gets the pass, and Gabe is able to sweep, and Junie counters with his own amazing De La Riva sweep.
Dude, I watched this sweep like 3 or 4 times. It's just a really beautiful, technically really sound sweep. He just gets De La Riva, stands up, tacks up, gets the leg over. Just
yeah. So it's what he does is he uses the De La Riva side to knock Gabe onto his hands, basically, and posts up on his hands. And really quick, I mean, lightning quick, Junie pummels his other leg to the outside. So now both of his legs are on the outside, and he just comes up. It's like, it's a very elegant sweep, especially in Nogi. I would love to drill that. And, you know, he comes back up, and then, you know, Junie gets to side control and windshield wipers into mount with a strong katagatame and, you know, rides the rest of the match out.
Yeah, he kind of has one really good arm triangle attempt, and then he kind of loses and goes back to it again, and the second attempt isn't quite as good, but the first attempt is, like, between going across the guard as easily as
such a commanding
as he did, and then the tech ups, like the beautiful De La Riva work, coming back up to the top, finishing in the mount with the arm triangle, and then going forward again, like, very clear-cut decision for Ocasio.
Yep.
I'm really curious to see who he fights. I think we've seen him on a couple fight to wins now. We've seen him like now he's on the main card. He's in like he's fighting guys like Gabe Tuttle who just fought Kyle Tara. Like, who do we give him next? Because now if this is a rankings event, I'm really curious to see what Ocasio is going to be ranked. I know I can look at his rankings, but I'm not going to do it right now because it'll mess up the show. I'm curious to see who he matches up with next.
Yeah, it'd be really really interesting to see too. But I definitely think, you know. I would like to see Junie hit like a top 10 person just to see like, you know, where he's at.
Yeah.
All right.
Moving on to the undercard.
Undercard. Don Westman defeats Parker Lapp via armbar. Steve Hargett defeats Andrew Franco via decision. Chris Orozco defeats Brian Pierce via heel hook. Andre Porfirio defeats Higor Beck via decision. Joseph Bayes defeats Eddie Wittern via heel hook. Joe Dirk Shing defeats Nick Green, and Travis Moore defeats Seth Daniels via heel hook.
And then Seth Daniels announced his own loss, which I think is always funny. I think it's really funny that Seth announces, like, he goes, fights, announces, and comes back. It's been a while since we've seen Seth on Fight to Win, so again, I'm happy that he's bouncing back in as a competitor.
Yeah, I know he had, like, a neck injury
Like, a hand surgery where he tore all the ligaments in his hand. Then he had, like, a neck surgery and cortisone shots in his neck. Then he had, like, another neck surgery or something like that.
Well, I'm glad to see he's back up and running again.
Yeah.
So.
On to the brown belt results.
Brad Schneider defeats Nicholas Spacek via rear naked choke from Crucifix.
And that is the submission of the night for the brown belts.
Joey Velasquez defeats Danny Allen via split decision. Daniel Mark Calvert defeats James Gifford via heel hook. Matt Cox defeats Michael Winters via decision. Stephanie Lee Kopax defeats Julia Otolino via heel hook. Justin Rennick defeats Gerson Aleph via decision. Michael Lugo defeats Jorge Castaneda via decision. William Watts defeats Christopher Kunchik via triangle. Manuel Aguilar defeats Brandon Gutierrez.
On to the purple belt results.
Cameron Mellett defeats Grayson Henley via decision.
She becomes the fight to win bantamweight champion.
Andrew Tackett defeats Dante Muschamp via rear naked choke.
Becomes the fight to win welterweight champion. Andrew Tackett killing it.
Always,
as always. And dude, Dante, I think didn't we commentate a Dante match at SAGC?
The name is familiar, yeah. The last name. Dante. I'm trying
I think we did.
Is he the, is this the,
It's not Savinon.
No, okay. So that, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Marinon. No, it's a, I think we have.
Yeah, I think
but,
we have.
Dude, no, I think no slouch, really good. Andrew Tackett, again, finally getting promoted and getting the belt pretty much immediately. I'm curious to see who he defends that against for the next, like, year-ish before he goes to Brown.
William Lowry defeats Jordan Sainz via neck crank. Jorge Valadares defeats Mike Graves by decision. Daishi Gato defeats Francisco Papasidero via decision.
Yeah?
Papasidero, yeah. Steven Ramos defeats Alejandro Wagner via decision.
And that's fight of the night for the purple belts.
David Weintraub defeats Nick Fernando Martinez. Jacob Couch defeats Ramiro Leon via heel hook.
Submission of the night for the purple belts.
Lauren Sears defeats Jesse Crane via split decision. Mike Rakshen defeats Luke Perry via leg lock.
And on to the blue belt results.
Brayden Wolf defeats Noah Gutierrez. Stephanie Taylor defeats Britton Dane Bailey via heel hook. James Regina defeats Cody Dixon via decision. Taylor Clark defeats Brittany Bays via armbar.
That was submission of the night for the blue belts.
Nathan Siegel defeats Lewis McLennan via choke.
And that was Friday night for the blue belts.
Blake Anthony Carter defeats Zachariah O'Malley via naked choke.
On to the teen results.
Helena Kravar defeats Mackenzie Baezi via Americana.
So, another Who's Number One event in the books. I'm curious to see how the rankings get updated. I love that they do these events. I think that it's really important for professional jiu-jitsu to have a ranking system and like have people move up and down in the rankings because it gives some storyline to a lot of these events. I also love the overlays at this event. And like they brought their competitors, they had like a graphic of the competitor, they had their accolades and accomplishments, they had like individual graphics for a lot of the fights. I thought that was really, really good and added to the production. They also had a new corner camera that was like super high resolution that was awesome on this event. And so I love that they're like amping up and bringing the production level up to these. It's making it even better in addition to live chat and the voting. Like they're making big changes and I'm a big fan of it. I want to move into the preview of Third Coast.
Yeah.
Third Coast Kumite 5. I got a bracket here that I am super excited about, Emil.
Yeah, so overall, we have Roberto Jimenez, Ty Rotolo, Renato Canuto.
Oh, one other piece. You continue, then I'll get my news.
Hugo Marquez, Victor Oliveira, Oliver Taza, Jami Tama, and Jonatus Gracie. That is stacked. 170-pound Kumite.
Hell of a line. Dude, if Roberto is going to make 170, I don't know how he's going to do it, but... I think they were saying he's cutting like 20 pounds to make it.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. I think this will probably be one of the last events we see him at 170. He'd be one of those like final young guy makes the cut down, and then that's the last time he makes the cut down.
So, bracket, do you have the bracket up?
Yeah, I did the bracket. Okay. Oh, yep. But Third Coast Grappling has also announced a women's Kumite.
Hell yeah.
Which is a $10,000 below 160 pounds. I wish I would have done this in news because it's a huge news event. $10,000 women's bracket. I forget the largest payout we've ever seen for a women's tournament like this outside of like ADCC. I think Five Grappling might have done a big women's championship. I think we've seen...
Black Belt CBD, I think, did...
And Baby Vieira won that.
Yeah.
Is that 40 grand?
It was a lot. It
might have been 40 grand.
I seem to remember it being the same as the men's.
I think they were both 40 grand.
Yeah.
But again, this is a $10,000 tournament for eight women tournament. Super excited. Their Third Coast always has really great like women's matches, so I'm happy that they're going to get a whole bracket out there and showcase the women. Huge news.
Yeah.
You know, that is great. Let's move on to the bracket for the men's under 70.
We got Roberto Jimenez versus Hugo Marquez, Jonatus Gracie versus Vitor Oliveira.
And on the right side of the bracket,
Renato Canuto versus Johnny Tama, and Oliver Taza versus Ty Rotolo.
Yeah. Make your picks, Emil. It's picks time. One of my favorite parts of the show is getting brackets, like, when we have a chance to preview them. Thanks, Third Coast, for actually getting your brackets out, like, closer than the day before the event. And then like talking about how we think the brackets are going to go, and then watching my picks fall apart as Cyborg and Roberto Jimenez fuck up my bracket.
Yeah, I'm going to go with obviously that's the easy one for me is Jimenez.
You think Jimenez takes Mark? I think so. Jimenez beats Marquez.
Yeah. So in terms of Jonatus Gracie versus Vitor Oliveira, I'm kind of leaning on Jonatus. And I haven't seen Jonatus a whole lot, but I'm trying to remember. He had a really impressive
win. Was it Worlds or Euros?
I can't remember. He had a win that like shocked everybody.
Or was it Pans?
I can't remember.
It was a major win in the gi.
Yeah.
In
terms of so Hinato Kanuto versus Chani Tama, that's going to be an amazing match.
I kind of want to give the edge here to Kanuto.
Yeah, I do too. I think like he's a volume and pressure grappler. Like
I think he'll just play really well into the third coast, like the way that they run. We go into overtime for a lot of these matches, though. That is kind of the weird question of like who's wrestling. I think Kanuto has really good wrestling. We saw that on display in ADCC versus Tonin.
Yep.
So I kind of want to give the edge to Kanuto there, just because he probably will be able to score the two. But Tama's real, real crafty. Again, Tama's going to go up a little bit in weight here. He usually fights at 45-55. Mm-hmm. Kanuto typically fights at 77 too. So, you know, not too much bigger than that. Yep. 170-ish. Give the edge there to Kanuto, I think. And yep. Then Rotolo versus Taza. These guys spend on the opposite sides of the bracket. This is really hard for me to pick.
Taza's really good, but Ty is amazing.
He's the prodigy kid.
Yeah.
And so he's been getting better and better and better. And it's at 170. He's not going to have to cut a ton of weight. I think Taz is going to have to cut a little
like
bit of weight
Taza,
to get there.
Remind me, Taza's style is like leg locky, right?
To say the least. Yes. Yeah. Yes. That is one way to put what Oliver Taza does.
I would just be surprised if that will work against Ty.
We saw Ty versus Nicky, and we were really, really impressed at the way he dealt with like Nicky. I'm sorry.
Well, Nick. I think Ty was stronger than Nicky. I don't think he's going to be stronger than
I think Taza. I think Taz is going to cut some weight to make this weight. I do not think Ty will cut very much weight to make 170 here. He may have to cut he gets bigger and bigger. He may have to cut like 10 pounds or so, but I think Taz is going to have to cut like 15 plus.
Like strength wise, I think it's a push. They're probably about equal, maybe an edge to Taza. So, but you know, I don't see Ty pressuring his way through the same way he did against Nicky. But I also don't think that Oliver's leg locks are going to be, I don't think he's going to catch him.
Right. But if it goes to overtime and there's not enough points to score, if, you know, Ty is unable to pass or unable to, you know, get enough points, because Taz has really got a sub first game here. We've seen Taza wrestle up, I think, in Jits King.
I see Ty just being like relentless in overtime.
Yeah.
You know, like getting on the back and just being
getting something going at one point, just because he's like, he can maintain that speed and pressure for the entirety of a match and just like isn't going to slow whatsoever.
Yep. Yeah.
Honestly, a really excited. I'm super happy that's in the first round. I think it maybe should be on the side of the bracket, but that's a really, really good. That's, I think, one of my most exciting first round matchups here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we get edge of tie. So we get Kanuto versus Rotolo then. I think we're both in agreement. That's probably how that's going to go. What do you think?
Kanuto versus Rotolo?
Yeah.
Hoo.
For the semifinals on the right side of the bracket.
Damn. Oh, that's compelling. I really hope we get to see that. I have no idea. I mean, like, part of me in my head, I see, like, because of their like ridiculous matches, like Wagner and Kanuto being like very similar.
Mm-hmm. And I was thinking back to the Kanuto and Dante match we saw at Kasai.
Right.
And I think both at Kasai.
And Wagner was able to really like, I think I see Kanuto being able to pressure Ty a lot.
Yeah. So. He pushes up a pace. Do you think Kanuto takes that one?
I do, yeah. I think it goes to overtime.
I think Kanuto gets the score. I think he does something in overtime, either a takedown or a sweep, or he does something to get it done. I honestly wouldn't be surprised here to see Ty put him in some danger, because Kanuto's, you know, kind of gangster when it comes to you know, how he will fight in a match.
Yeah.
But I don't think Tai will be able to submit him. But in overtime, I feel like Canuto is going to come out guns blazing, kind of match that pace with Tai and work in those bursts.
You know, be curious to see, like, you know, with the way Canuto wrestles, especially, like, you know, if we see Tai being able to, like, get his Darce game going.
Yeah.
You know, that
like,
would
like
be...
How low down is he going to be able to get Canuto's head? Mm-hmm. How much of a bent over stance is he going to, like, work Canuto into?
Yeah.
And we're going to see, like, the jumping Darce passes or, like, the standing Darce game potentially being used in conjunction with takedowns for Ricola.
I see standing Darce for sure. The question will be if he can settle on, but...
Yeah,
we'll
this
see.
Fight bracket's hard.
It's hard.
Canuto, maybe.
Yeah.
Who do you got?
Canuto,
we got Jimenez on the right side. I just think.
Yeah.
Again, I picked against Jimenez a bunch. So Canuto versus Jimenez potentially in the finals here. I don't want to pick against Jimenez at Third Coast.
Yeah, no.
He's so familiar with the rule set. He's so familiar. He's won the rule set before.
Yeah.
Like, he knows how to get it done. He knows how to score. He's familiar.
Of the guys here, like, I don't see who could give Jimenez a problem. Like,
I am curious to see if the cut affects him really bad, because we've seen him get a little tired in matches before. Not a lot, but I'm saying if he's cutting 20 pounds, like, when's the last time he's done a big, big cut like that and had a tournament-style
bracket?
Yeah,
he's young. Like,
yeah, he's young.
I could see him eating that no problem. So.
Yeah. I it's just something to consider. I don't think it will be a problem, but I do want to consider it because this will be the most we've seen Jimenez cut down in ever, I think, since we've covered Jimenez.
Yeah.
So probably get the edge of Jimenez. Also, some dope super fights on the card.
Yeah, we got Pedro Mourinho versus Adam Bradley.
Adam Bradley's the guy we saw on SUG recently, and he's the guy we saw on Subspectrum hit the Scorpion Deathlock, that weird, like, bent over Kimura on the underhook side. I think he's an Atos black belt. This is low-key, like, a really, really, really good fight. I'm going to give the edge to Mourinho here, but this is one that you do not want to miss. Both guys go really, really hard and are probably going to come out, like, guns a-blazing with action fights. So, really, really good fight here.
Ricardo Evangelista versus Ricardo Demente. Arnaldo Maidana versus Guillermo Soares. Jordan Burton III versus Roberto Rivas. Arlton Ardrey versus Jay Spiegel. Bruce Whitehead versus Felipe Hosha. Christian Guzman versus Ricky Peoples. Josh Walker versus Lucas Aguilar. And JT Little versus Duke Edwards.
So, should be a super fun card happening on August 8th. Anything else on that?
Mm-mm.
All right. Also happening this weekend, supposedly happening this weekend, is Fight 2 and 149 happening on August 7th. I don't have any matches announced for this card. I can't seem to find any. I looked around for a minute, and I just couldn't find anything listed. So it may be that it's listed initially on the Flow Grappling page, and then they move the event. Occasionally, Fight 2 will do this where... They will kind of book events out, and then especially recently they've been filling them like closer and closer to the event. They will occasionally like drop a week and then just like put some of the fights that they were planning on doing for like a stronger card in like 2 weeks or something like that. So that is potentially what's going to happen, but potentially there's going to be a fight to win this next weekend. If it's anything like the last couple weeks we've had, I'm super excited for it as always, but it'll be a Friday card, so it will not conflict with Third Coast. Other than that, pretty quiet weekend. Not a whole lot of new events. I mean, not a whole lot of like other grappling will take place. So, you know, get to watch the UFC, and you get to watch Black Beast take on Alexei Oleinik.
That'll be fucking hilarious. Oh my god,
the heavyweight fight.
That's right.
That's the main event too.
Do you think Black Beast is gonna do the
like, just fucking stand up?
Just stand up.
Yes, I do think. Like, I think that. Oh yeah, like oh the guy really good at the Nogi Ezekiel. Is going to try to no-gi Ezekiel Derek Lewis. And Derek Lewis on the ground is like just going to go,
an unstoppable force meets an immovable object.
This dude, I'm honestly like really... I know that we're going to see in that fight... we're talking about the UFC, by the way. I know that in that fight, we're going to see like Oleinik get Derek Lewis down. Like, he's going to drag him down the cage.
If he doesn't get fucking KO'd, dude.
If he doesn't get Derek Lewis, if does the Black Beast don't show up.
That's right.
My balls will say, they don't fucking love Derek Lewis. He's like a whimsical. I saw him fight live back in, like, when McGregor fought Dennis Seaver. That was live in Boston.
Yeah. Oh, no shit.
Were you at that fight?
No, I didn't, but I watched it.
Yeah, I was at that fight.
I remember because, like, Seaver was old as shit, right?
Not really. He was still ranked. He was, like, it was kind of... I can talk about forever about this. I was when that happened, I was super into MMA. I literally watched every single fight on every single UFC card for a couple years straight. I was actively involved in like the UFC pick'em. I was like, I think in the top like 300 in the world for a while for like picks. I got super into the UFC and I would watch like all of the Fight Pass events, all the Invicta cards. I think what was then RFA and what was LFA before that? Like I was super deep in MMA, so I can talk about that forever, but I watched him, Sean Jordan KO'd him live. And, in like 2 seconds, cause I was in the bathroom and I missed the fight. Yeah. That's the only Derek Lewis fight I've ever seen live and I missed it.
That's hilarious.
So it should be a good fight. I'm curious to see, watch Derek Lewis for his ability to stand up super technically and make it look like it's not. It's actually like somebody did a takedown, like a breakdown of like what he's doing technically. It's astonishing.
Hmm.
Like how he builds his frames, what he does, like the level of consistency he has with his
tech up. He's also strong as fuck.
He is also strong as fuck. That does, it was also played a factor into.
That's a meals breakdown.
Into right Black Beast in this hoe.
Yeah.
As he says. I love watching that. I got nothing else. What do you got going on this weekend? This week?
Oh my God, dude. I'm fucking rehabbing. Turns out I have a herniated disc.
Yeah. High five, Emil. It's, it's not great.
No,
it do sucks. Whatever you can to not not have it affect your life like me.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, it could be a lot worse.
You could be mine.
Right,
where it's like in constant pain 2 years later.
Yeah, I'm not there.
It's not great. It's a solid 2 out of 10. Would not break my back again.
Yeah. So thankfully, I have you to to coach me.
Yeah, dude. Text me whenever. Like,
yeah.
If your back is jacked up, do whatever you can to not have it completely fuck up your life.
Yeah.
For like 2 years.
Yeah.
And like do the shots, do whatever.
Yeah. I mean, obviously I'm not training now, so that's good. So it's, trying to remain mobile and, all that fun stuff while rehabbing. What about you? What are you getting into?
I'm going to watch this hurricane. This is the first hurricane for me.
It's a fucking tropical storm.
Okay. I've done blizzards for years. I'm used to that. Like tropical storms, tropical depressions, hurricanes, they're new for me. I'm very excited. I'm going to set up a bunch of time-lapse cameras. Okay.
That's it.
It rain?
Like, maybe a little bit, but not like nearly as much as you think.
I'm actually way less excited about this now.
Yeah.
So yeah, that'll be hopefully in a lot. About 15 hours.
Yeah.
It'll be rolling through. I've been watching it all day on the weather tracker, getting all excited.
Oh, actually, I take that back. It might be heavy rains, but like, there are times when I've been in actual hurricanes, and the rain is not as bad as you think. Like a lot of the flooding for some hurricanes is like pushing water just because like
the tidal, the tidal surge.
Yeah. So,
okay. Huh.
We'll see how it goes.
So I'm excited for that. I'm looking forward to the weather phenomenon that I've been looking at. I don't have a whole lot else. Really just, staying safe, staying healthy, running a lot, doing time-lapse photography everywhere in my house. It's been good.
Yeah.
So, all right. That does it.
All right.
As always in the show, I'm your host, Main. Jump my co-host.
Emil.
We got the Grappling Rewind. We'll see you on the mats whenever that is. Stay safe. If you like the show, please consider sharing it on Facebook with the folks at your gym. It's the best way that we grow the show, and we really appreciate it. You can reach out to us on email.
We also have Instagram. We have Facebook. We have Twitter. We have Google+.
Until that shuts down.
We have a website.
If you have an event you would like to have us cover, please let us know. If you have a name, like most people do, and you'd like to have us stop butchering it,
let us know.
Reach out to us. The show is also available on YouTube, Spotify, in addition to iTunes and every other podcast service. We very much appreciate your time, and thank you.